Consequence Podcast Network.
It's 12 o'clock on a Saturday. I've got... No, I'm not. I'm letting that go. Thank you for this drink, Clint.
No problem. Does the feel of cold steel on your hands feel good while you crinkle this drink?
After this terrible week. Dear listeners,
yes.
It's been a really shitty week. And we're going to try really hard to be positive about this. But when you program a podcast, sometimes you're like, well, that's definitely going to be the week that we rank all the Ryan Murphy characters. And then the week is just miserable and all you want to do is talk about like happy, shiny things. But instead, we're going to spend this hour talking about American Crime Story and American Horror Story and Feud and sometimes Glee. And so we're drinking at 12 o'clock on a Saturday.
With our fancy stainless steel stirrers that are also straws.
It's the bougiest thing I've ever seen.
Indeed. Thanks, Bespoke Post. We're looking for sponsorships.
Where's DJ Roomba? Because that would really complete
I know. Image. DJ Roomba, turn it up.
Welcome to TV Party. Shoemaker.
I'm Clint Worthington.
And we're here to talk about the week in television. Yes. It's just us.
I know.
It's
just
a
the
duet.
Two of us. Just it's the two of us.
Pas de deux.
No, a pas de deux.
It is. That's become, you know how when you're writing a bunch of reviews, every once in a while you stumble into like a word hole that you can't get out of?
I cannot stop saying
pas de deux.
I live in word holes.
I can't. I've also been saying, Revenantly is something else entirely, and I've been saying what else?
Wax rhapsodic?
No.
Oh.
And I also don't say sumptuous.
Oh.
No.
Well.
I've gotten those out of my system.
Okay, good.
But reverently and pas de deux.
Mm-hmm.
And marvelous. I'm really high on marvelous at the moment. It's a really good word. As we teased in our bit that wasn't a bit, we are going to be talking about the Ryan Murphyverse today. Specifically, we're going to be ranking the top 15 players in the Ryan Murphy repertory company.
Yes.
Which I got to say, Ryan Murphy, there's a lot of things to like about him and there's a lot to not like.
Yeah.
Mostly like, and
I think he's on an upswing.
Yeah. He's done game-changing things for TV.
Mm-hmm.
I think repertory seasons and this whole sort of hacking of the limited series category at the Emmys is fascinating, but mostly just the concept of like taking one story and building on it with another that is not related except for sometimes it is in teeny tiny ways, showing loyalty to actors who are loyal in return and getting great performances out of them as a result, shepherding some really great writers. Mm-hmm. I think there's way more positive than negative.
Right.
But we are also going to talk about a lot of TV shows that I had to stop watching like 7 episodes into a season because I couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah,
and that's part of the deal. But you know those 7 episodes? Very entertaining.
Right,
it's
there
just,
you go.
Then you're like,
it's just
and
a lot.
I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes
that's good.
There is a very limited shelf life sometimes for certain Ryan Murphy properties. And yeah, I think I'm the exact same way. So like, what is your cross section? What is your Ryan Murphy experience? Like, what have you seen? What of your body of his body?
The only season of Horror Story that I haven't seen any of is the most recent one, is Cult, because it was just too freaking soon.
Yeah.
Which I really want to see eventually because I think Evan Peters looks fucking terrifying in it,
mm-hmm.
and Sarah Paulson is amazing, and they added Allison Pill, who's amazing and deserved so much better from The Newsroom, and a bunch of other really great actors. So I'll get there eventually. I haven't finished every season of American Horror Story, although I think the only one that I actually quit on was Roanoke.
I quit 2 episodes into Hotel.
Okay. Yeah, I watched all of Hotel.
Threshold.
Hotel got better as the season went on. So I've seen basically all of American Horror Story. I've seen all of American Crime Story.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen all of Pose. Mm-hmm. I dipped in and out of Nip Tuck. When it was on, we didn't have cable, so I would occasionally catch it at other people's houses. Then when we did get cable, if it was on, I sometimes watched it, but I didn't watch religiously. I've only seen bits and pieces of 911. What am I forgetting? I completely bypassed The New Normal.
Uh-huh.
And
Scream Queens.
And Popular. I've seen 6 or 7 episodes of Scream Queens.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it through, I think, 3.5 seasons of Glee and dropped in sporadically elsewhere. What about you?
I'm about a season and a half of Glee.
Oh, and The Normal Heart. I've seen and loved The Normal Heart. Which
but not The New Normal Heart.
Hmm? Oh, gross. We are not going to count The Normal Heart, as that is not a series and felt like its own thing. It's or The Boys in the Band. Ryan Murphy is producing a very starry revival of The Boys in the Band on Broadway right now.
Yeah. We would be here all day if we did every single thing Ryan Murphy's ever done.
But so we limited it to series. But The Normal Heart is extraordinary. If you haven't seen it, it's great.
Like I said, American Horror Story, I'm caught up until the first couple episodes of Hotel. And then I watched both seasons of American Crime Story, and I am just as caught up on Pose. So, as you are. So,
yeah.
And no 911. So.
And no New Normal.
No New Normal. No bits Glee. Of Nip Tuck.
Nip Tuck. It was a lot for me.
A lot of chiseled jaws and grotesqueries.
I also have seen episodes here and there of Popular, but that predates a lot of what we're talking about.
Gotcha. But over the course of that glorious body of work, he's cultivated a lot of returning players, some of which recur a lot more than normal. And of those people, we're going to talk about their contributions to the Ryan Murphy canon.
Yeah, I think it's the most interesting thing about his work personally. There are other things that are very interesting. He's picked a really terrific crop of visual artists to work with. The production design always on point. His costume designer is just fucking sick. She's so good. He is often boundary pushing. That can be sometimes a bit much.
Yeah.
But it's done great things for TV in general, I think.
Yeah. LGBT representation, especially. Yeah.
And that obviously right now in particular is super important.
Very important. Yeah, exactly. And again, like you always know a Ryan Murphy show when you see it. It's in that specific vein of theatricality. Like you said, with the costumes, with a very unique way that sort of lies somewhere between Kubrick and I don't know, something else that I'm David Lynch a little bit.
Although I think the crime stories are a little bit more subdued.
Yeah.
Versace is, I think that People versus OJ is a little more subdued.
Yeah.
The nature of Versace is that it has to be sort of there is that melodramatic
glam
right?
fashion, yeah, thing.
Well, because that's so much of what the designer's work is, right? Larger than life, extreme, in your face, and
But I think even then, there are certain elements of OJ Simpson that have that weird sort of, especially like in his home, that sort of wide angle opulence that'll be there occasionally.
Yeah.
But yeah, either way, a lot of great body of work. But before we get to that, we do have some news.
So we've got a bunch of news this week. The first, and we are going to limit this time-wise because we're just not that show, and I don't really have it in me to talk about it, is the unexpected and extremely tragic death of Anthony Bourdain.
It's absolutely sad. He was a pioneer, not just as a chef, but also on TV, which is why we're talking about it. I mean, his shows, No Reservations, Parts Unknown, Kitchen Confidential, like those opened up a side of the restaurant industry and then even just travel and food culture and just culture that I think a lot of people have really benefited from, including, I can easily say myself, like I learned so much about the world through Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
I have his La Halles cookbook. I made his sort of like pork chop a la charcuterie last night, and I'm going to make his French onion soup tonight because I feel like that's the best way I can think of to honor him is like through his food.
See, for me, I think the best way I can honor him is just make a point. We live in an incredibly diverse city. Mm-hmm. It is also very segregated, though. I am fortunate to live in one of the more diverse neighborhoods in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And there are places I've just never been to, and I just need to go in those places. And some of them, I mean, there are places that when I first went there, I was sort of thinking about Anthony Bourdain's way of life and walking into a place you've never been before and trying something you've never tried, even and perhaps especially if it's in your own backyard. There's this place, little tiny hole in the wall in Rogers Park called the Noonhour Grill. Mm-hmm. And the woman who runs it, it's Susie's Noonhour Grill. They're not open for dinner. Susie is, I would guess, in her late 80s. She's Korean. She makes breakfast and then like bibimbap. And then combines them, and we'll also do like you can get a kimchi omelet, and it's just amazing. The food is amazing. Mm-hmm. Cash only, takes forever because it's just her. She takes your order, she cooks it, she brings it to you. The coffee's always good. It is great.
Yeah, and I mean, I think
I
it
need
was,
to find more places like that. That's what I need to do.
Exactly, and I think his role in the food discourse and food culture discourse was in finding the value and extolling the virtues of this hole-in-the-wall places of working people's food, of things that aren't like Michelin star restaurants, and like elevating it to these new, mm-hmm. you know, gastropub sort of
Have
possibilities.
Have you seen the Waffle House one?
No, oh, I need to see good. It though. Oh, no, thinking, the piece? Yeah, no, yeah, yeah that is great.
I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the Barack Obama episode with the noodles mm-hmm. Yesterday, and just thinking I need to travel more.
Yeah.
But also worth saying, he has been one of the most outspoken allies for the Me Too and Time's Up movements. Mm-hmm. He's
in
real,
ways that didn't make it about him,
he's
which
a
was
real
very
call
important
a spade
too.
A spade, and a lot of self-reflection that he was really open about, particularly in the role that he thinks Kitchen Confidential may have played in glamorizing an abusive system.
Yeah,
was very open when friends in the food industry were accused, and obviously hugely supportive of his partner at the time of his death, Asia Argento. So
yeah,
it's very sad.
Yeah, very sad. We'll all miss him in our own ways.
I'm going to watch some Parts Unknown this week and yeah. have a good cry.
Absolutely.
In much stranger news.
Yeah.
Shonda Rhimes has announced her first Netflix series in her massive Netflix deal, and it is an Anna Delvey series. Did you read that piece?
No.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I cannot wait for this shit. Where was it actually? Was it The Cut?
Was it Vanity Fair? Oh, yeah, I see The Cut piece here, yeah.
Yeah, it's just nuts. It is this woman who just pretended that she was a European socialite of undetermined origins with a confusing accent. She fucking stayed in first-class hotels and got on private jets and shit for free because she did.
Yeah.
It's insane. And I highly recommend the read. I cannot imagine what this series is going to look like. But the second I saw it with Shonda, I was like, okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right. I see you.
That's probably the perfect person to
snaked it right it from under Ryan Murphy's nose. Because, man, otherwise, American Crime Story, grifter.
I know. Oh, my God.
Right?
Great.
Yeah. So that is very exciting. We also got word of a Game of Thrones prequel that I could give two shits about.
I did not even click on the article because I was like, and I really like Game of Thrones. But I think Game of Thrones is the only thing I need about that world. Like,
well,
as soon as it's done, I don't care.
See, I love the books. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of the other related material. I've read some of the short stories and stuff that come way before. I've got the giant guide to Ice and Fire or whatever, like the big book with all the maps in it and shit. Uh-huh. I'm one of those. But I just can't get it. And this is the pilot. They ordered it straight to series. The pilot is co-written by George R. R. Martin. Mm-hmm. It's 2,000 years before the events of Game of Thrones. But I just sort of feel like I'm way more interested in stories that are like running on parallel tracks, like a part of the world I haven't seen, as mm-hmm. opposed to when we know what the ending is already.
You know, like Fear the Walking Dead as opposed to The Walking Dead. So
bad
I couldn't even keep,
example.
I couldn't finish that.
Oh boy.
I couldn't even finish that with
no,
a straight face.
No, like Grownish and Blackish.
Gotcha. That makes more sense.
Yeah. Anyway, it'll probably be great. It's not like they don't know what they're doing, but
it
man.
Might be well made, but it's one of those things. I feel like, you know, as solidly okay as Solo is, I feel like I hope it taught us a lesson that like we don't necessarily need to know the prequel story of like all this information for a lot of these franchises.
Yeah. I mean, 2000, it's going to probably end up being about like the First Men and the origin of the White Walkers and stuff. And that could be very, very exciting.
Yeah.
But I'm finding it hard to get worked up.
Yeah.
I've also been thinking a lot about the Emmys because we're working on this dream Emmy ballot for the site. And God, it's just even hard for me to get retroactively excited about Game of Thrones. Peter Dinklage is a fucking treasure. And yeah. I was like, I just don't want to put him on this ballot.
It just kind of feels like the cultural moment is over for Game of Thrones.
Well,
and it's kind of running out of steam.
Oh, it's going to come back.
Yeah.
The cultural moment will be back.
Oh, good.
It's just because it's been off the air. Anyway, we also got news that is both unsurprising and a huge relief, which is that Atlanta mm-hmm. will be coming back for a third season.
Yeah. It's always nice to just hear it confirmed.
Yeah. Well, the question there was never whether or not FX was going to want it. Of course they were. I mean, the FX stood by The Americans as its ratings got lower every season.
Yeah.
Because they knew they had an all-timer on their hands. So, like, of course they were going to want another season of Atlanta. The question was whether or not they were going to be able to do one.
Oh.
You know, like, all of those people are very busy now.
Yeah.
Brian Tyree Henry, his fucking IMDb page is nuts. In production, post-production, announced, and I'm like, shit.
Hotel Artemis in theaters now.
Right?
Yeah.
Lakeith, very busy. Mm-hmm. Donald Glover, plenty of time on his hands.
Yeah.
Zazie Beetz, very busy.
He needs a hobby.
Murai, very busy. So it's great that we'll be getting in.
Right.
Greg Berlanti signed a $300 million deal with Warner Brothers. I think it's for 5 years.
Okay.
And the interesting thing there is not that he signed it, but that he didn't talk to anyone else. Greg Berlanti is rumored to be, I'm not sure rumored is the best word there for something that's positive, but extremely loyal.
Mm-hmm.
So he just didn't, he didn't like pull a Ryan Murphy or a Shonda. He didn't talk to other networks. He signed
kept it
Warner
in the
Brothers.
Family. Yeah.
It's also setting him up for a lot of money in the future.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Is it for the same shows he's already doing? Or
and additional things.
Yeah. So look forward to Arrow season 12, everybody.
Oh boy. in
related news.
No, not related news. Amazon has officially given a green light to the Underground Railroad show they were talking about, and Barry Jenkins is going to direct every episode.
That's great.
It's fucking awesome. It's so great that we're in a time where someone is like, yeah, best picture, what?
Mm-hmm.
Television.
Right.
It's really cool.
I'm looking forward to Barry Jenkins tweeting about all of his episodes also.
Yeah. Oh, well,
because Barry Jenkins is a delight on Twitter.
Very good on the Twitter.
Yeah.
He's really good on Twitter. Mm. We also got news that another big fancy movie person is returning to TV. Joss Whedon is going to be executive producing, which is the only reason that this doesn't give me some pause, a series for Freeform called Pippa Smith, Grown Up Detective, about a child detective who is just too old for the game now. it was created by two women, so Whedon is there in an executive producer capacity, not a creator capacity, and it sounds like my exact shit.
Nice. Sounds like a new version of Mystery Team almost.
The series is described as a dark comedy that follows Pippa, this is Variety, that follows Pippa Smith, a 20-something former kid sleuth, as she deals with relationships, addiction, and being too dang old for the directing game. Each episode, Pippa solves a new case while unraveling a bigger mystery and attempting to navigate a messy personal life. Like, that could not be more my
shit.
That
sounds pretty lovely.
It's not quite as much my shit as the Hailee Steinfeld, Emily Dickinson comedy.
Yeah.
Like,
that's just
right?
Throwing darts at an Alison Shoemaker dartboard,
right?
And
but if
bullseye.
This was Pippa Smith, grown-up musical detective, that would be a different story. So,
aces.
Created by Siobhan Thomas and Rebecca Drysdale, and executive produced by Whedon.
Great.
So excited about that. God, we are making good time.
Let's keep going. What's this new show that Russell T. Davies is doing?
This sounds cool as hell. So this is a BBC drama, family drama that he's writing called Years and Years. The show will follow the lives of a single family, the Lyons, over 15 years in a Britain rocked by political change and economic and technological advances. When their lives all converge on one crucial night in 2019, the story accelerates into the future, following the lives and loves of the Lyons over the next 15 years. In a near future in which Britain has left the EU, America is isolationist, and China increasingly powerful, the story also takes to the rise of power of Vivian Rook, a new breed of politician, entertainer, and rebel. Right? It sounds so
sounds
normal.
Like
and then
fantasy.
You're like, ugh.
Yeah, I feel like I was on a roller coaster. Yeah.
Yeah. So I am into it as a Davies fan, a fan of Davies era, who for its missteps, they're my kind of missteps.
I still haven't seen his like most recent thing, that miniseries with Hugh Grant and Benoit Shaw. Yeah.
Matt, I have not either.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks fun.
But yeah, I'm excited about that. Always good when Rusty Davies is doing some more stuff. And then in way less sad news than a beloved cultural figure dying.
Right.
Keenan Lonsdale's leaving Legends of Tomorrow.
No. This is in like moderate bummer territory.
Yeah.
Like it's just like.
Well, and he leaving left, by choice.
Yeah, he left he made a very sweet letter. I remember you showing it. Like it really seems like he's sort of just doing it of his own volition. Like, I mean, that's the thing. It's the Arrowverse. They would keep him forever if they wanted to.
Well, it's like, what the fuck is his name? Roy Harper.
Oh, Colton Haynes.
Colton Haynes. They wrote him an exit this year, right? Like, yeah. Oh, you're not watching Arrow. So
But they wrote him an exit 3 seasons ago.
Yes. And then when... spoilers for this season of Arrow.
Yeah.
Sorry. I wasn't worried about you.
Yeah.
If you want to keep watching Arrow and you haven't watched the season, I'm spoiling things for you. But it was big news, so you've already seen it. When Willa Holland was leaving, she plays Thea, Oliver's sister. They wrote him into her departure arc. So right now, Thea Queen and Roy Harper are supposed to be traveling the globe destroying Lazarus pits so that she can like end the scourge of her father's bad legacy, basically. Only then he was like, hey guys, I think I'd like to come back. And they were like, cool. So now Roy Harper's going to be back on Arrow. So I guess like while he and Thea are traveling the world, they're going to break up. Or something?
I guess so.
Maybe he's got a twin? I don't know.
They'll do long distance. Long distance always works in the Arrowverse.
No. Anyway, that is our news of the week. Mm-hmm. Some good stuff, some not so good stuff. One very sad thing.
The week moves by fast and a lot of things happen.
Yeah. And I just, not to make it all a bummer, mm-hmm. but hey, if you out there are a person who struggles like I struggle and mm-hmm. you experienced a lot of heavy, dark thoughts this week because... Mm-hmm. two very prominent, seemingly very happy cultural figures took their own lives. I hope you're okay. And if you want help, there are places to find it. And take care of yourself. We should all take care of ourselves.
Absolutely.
Anyway, Patty.
Yes. We'll keep entertaining you.
It's time for episodes of the week, I think.
Indeed.
Great.
Sure.
It's going to be a shorter go-around because, again, it's just the two of us.
Right, exactly.
But it was also like kind of just an okay week for TV. So
it's
I'm
true.
Fine with it. Clint, what are your picks for the week?
Expanse is still great. Moving on. No.
On brand.
It was very on brand. It was a good episode, but I won't talk about it. I will refrain. I will restrain myself. Sense8 finale actually came out for everybody on Netflix. Like we said in previous episodes, myself and a frequent collaborator on TV Party, Kate Kolzik, and I, we all saw it live in theaters at the Music Box in Chicago with Lana Wachowski in attendance. It was great. And so I haven't seen it just like in the privacy of my own home, but I guarantee that it's a 2.5-hour blitzkrieg of emotions and psychic orgies and just incredible action sequences and just pure unfiltered sincerity. And so it's really great. And it ends in a big old wedding and it's just really, really cute. So I would highly recommend the Sense8 finale if you are invested at all. If you are, you've seen it already, so I don't even know why I'm talking. But in other news, since this is such sort of a mediocre week in TV, we're sort of just, you know, keeping the lights burning, I suppose. I followed the recommendation of Kate Kolzik and I started Steven Universe for the first time, which is adorable. Like, I mean, it's weird because I feel the same way that Kate does sometimes about The Expanse that she does about Steven Universe, where she's like, wait, the first few episodes are a little shaky. It's not representative of what the show is. And to a certain extent, that's true. I'm about halfway through the show's 52-episode first season. but then again, the episodes are like 11 minutes long, so what do I know? But even from those first few episodes, I was charmed. I mean, the voice cast is great. The animation style is adorable. But now I'm at the point in the show where, like, literally just this morning we were watching an episode that I think starts to speak to why Steven Universe has such a following within like LGBT communities too, because there is an episode where Steven Universe and his girlfriend like merge and become this sort of, you know, all-in-one genderqueer person. And it's all sort of about this honest exploration of what that feels like to be like sort of to sort of feel like you're two people in one and not quite sure what you are, and sort of wrestling with the way other people perceive you, as opposed to what you feel like. And it's all very earnest and very, very heartfelt while still maintaining that sense of playfulness that is in the show, that's like baked into the show's DNA. And there was an episode last night, that brought me to tears. So it's really, really good stuff.
Oh, I can't wait. Kate was kind enough to lend me the DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Tom and I are going to start tomorrow.
Yeah,
we're not able to start this week, but I'm
very
excited.
Oh, and the music,
excited.
On point. The cutest music you'll ever hear.
What? Kate Kolzik loves a show with great
music? I know,
music?
Right? It's so off-brand for her.
Amazing. I can't wait. I picked two things. One is the finale for the really terrific first season of The Last OG, which coincidentally starts a little shaky.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the early episodes, but I thought like, oh, this is fine. This is what I'll tune into when it's okay. I just want something in the background. And Tracy Morgan and Tiffany Haddish, it'll be funny, whatever. Cedric the Entertainer, it's fine.
Yeah.
And then like two or three episodes in, all of a sudden I was like, oh, this is really smart. And yeah. It was doing things that I expected would go one way. And it would always go the more interesting way, the more thoughtful way.
Yeah.
Clint is watching it too. He's a little bit behind me.
Yeah, I'm like most of the way through the first season.
I'm particularly fond of the episode when Tracy goes on the internet date, which is about the point when the show turned around for me and went in a really new, interesting direction.
Uh-huh.
But the finale, Clemenza, is co-written by Jordan Peele. So I was very excited when I saw that byline flash up.
Mm.
And it's a really interesting resolution to the season that was not quite as interesting as I hoped it would be. But it has this this sense of melancholy that I'm really pleased that the show isn't avoiding. Like, it's okay for it to be sweet and happy and honest and also pretty sad. There's a great scene between Tracy and Josh, which is one of my favorite dynamics on the show. I think that really underlines what a generous, compassionate person Tracy is.
Mm-hmm.
And we see a little bit in the penultimate episode that he's kind of always been that person, but was really starting to figure out who he is and what he wanted right before he ended up in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And coming out of prison is in this place where he wants to make up for the wrongs of his past and do right by his community and do right by his kids and do right by the woman he loved. And it's really great. And the finale ties up a bunch of those threads really nicely. And it's a terrific performance from Tracy Morgan.
Yeah. It feels like such a great sort of comeback from him after like a really harrowing experience.
Yeah.
I'm sure he experienced. And it's great to see him stretch his legs too, rather than just like, 30 Rock. I love Tracy Jordan, but it is very much like a joke machine sort of character. So it's nice to see him get the chance to play something with a few more layers to it.
Yeah, some heft.
Yeah, a little bit of heft.
Very good.
Yeah, quite good.
Yeah,
and so is Tiffany Haddish.
Yep,
and
Tiffany Haddish gets more to do as the season goes on. Those kids are great.
Those kids are great.
I just think it's a really strong first season of the show, and I can't wait to see where it goes in season two, mm-hmm. and I'm really glad it's getting a season two.
Yeah, also shout out to Ellen Maldonado, who makes me very happy every time I see him on screen is Bobby.
Yeah,
Bobby's always funny.
Yes.
Their
relationship also gets more interesting as the season goes on.
Nice. I look forward to finishing the season.
And Malik Yoba, who every time he shows up in something, I'm really excited. I knew Designated Survivor was in trouble when they killed his character off. I was like, what are you doing? Why did you do that? That was so stupid. And he is also really good in this finale.
Also the co-star of the short-lived sci-fi series Alphas, co-starring The Expanse's David Strathairn. Moving on.
Also Cool Runnings.
Cool Runnings.
Come on.
I know.
I also wanted to talk briefly about Dialand, which premiered on AMC with a two-hour premiere, so the first two episodes all wrapped up in one. Dialand is a mess, but it's a really interesting mess.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that it talks about body positivity and self-image is incredibly refreshing. I am a big fan of This Is Us, but I know I have a couple people in my life who are very outspoken about their fatness, and that is the word that they would use.
Mm-hmm.
As a person who's also super unhappy with my body
and
my weight, I try to be really sensitive about that, because there are people who struggle with their weight, and then there are people who are big pretty much their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not the same thing at all, which doesn't mean that other experiences aren't valuable. People suffer eating disorders, all that shit. But a lot of times we say, oh my God, I'm so fat. And what we mean is, oh my God, I put on 20 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically, my friend Kate Harding, who now mostly writes about rape culture, has done a lot of writing about life as a fat woman. Roxane Gay has done this. I'm not friends with Roxane Gay.
No.
Roxane Gay has done the same thing. My friend Brooke, who's one of my very favorite writers in the whole world, has done a lot of writing about
Lindy
her
West
body.
Has written a lot about it, too.
And Dietland is from that sphere. And the way that they took, like, I am very confident that the happy ending of this show is not Plum Kettle, Alicia, quote unquote Plum Kettle, because she's round and juicy.
Mm-hmm.
And she just wants to be Alicia. There is no way the happy ending of this show is that she loses weight.
Yeah.
I haven't read the novel, but there's no way that that's the happy ending of this show. So I'm very excited about it. It also jumps around stylistically a ton.
Hmm.
It's like Oh, it's just playing in like five different swimming pools and it doesn't always work, but it's always interesting. And the best thing is that Joy Nash, who plays Plum, is just great. One of my favorite performances of the year so far.
Nice.
So I urge you to check out Dietland. Episode 3 is where things get real weird. So I'm looking forward to, and that's as much as I've seen. So I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes after this week's episode, which I liked a lot.
Nice. I dig it.
Yeah, I'm into it. And good. Juliana Margulies.
Yeah, why not?
With
her
red
big
hair,
comeback, yeah.
Playing a bad guy.
I love it.
It's pretty fun. Anyway.
Make it happen.
All right. Bachelorette haiku. You go first.
All right. I will give you time to think of one. Jordan frolics nude. Hates uningenuity. That is not a word.
How am I going to top that? All right. Hold on.
Just a little tip from my own research. Professionality is also 6 syllables.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I came up with 3. They are all equally bad, so I'm just going to do all 3 of them.
Please do.
Hold on.
Mm-mm-mm. Welcome to Haiku Theater.
Wait, who is that guy? He lives in this big-ass house? Oops, he got no rose. Fuck Chris Harrison. They should so hire Lil Jon. Let's do the damn... What? And photo in the pool. That's a shitty tantrum, bro. You don't know drama.
There we go. It's that perfect nexus of related to the show and bad that I love.
What? That's my terrible Lil Jon impression.
Yes.
Speaking of Bobby, whose Lil Jon impression is excellent. I don't know if you've gotten to that episode yet.
No.
But he does a really good.
So
we won't say no more about The Bachelorette because that's how we're doing this. But I will say, if you have not read, there's an excellent piece in The Cut. No, it's Vulture by Catherine Van. I can never remember her last name. Catherine V something. About how, based on their response to a certain crisis ongoing in the Bachelorette world, they have revealed their own ending. They have spoiled the ending of the season just based on their reaction to this one thing. It's a very interesting read.
Interesting.
I encourage you to check it out. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
yeah. I just realized this, just on the spot. Do we want to talk about Drag Race at all this episode? Mm. Okay, that's fine.
I mean, I think sometimes there's a challenge that seems so designed for a specific person to win that if they don't, RuPaul takes it a little personally.
Yeah.
And that's what I will say about this week's elimination. I don't think that that she was robbed, but it seemed a little fishy to me.
Yeah. Was she set up for failure, do you think?
Oh, I think she was set up to win.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And yeah, then that like sort of, we're talking about Ms. Cracker.
Yeah,
spoiler,
yeah.
We're talking about Ms.
Yeah,
Cracker.
Ms. Cracker dropped, yeah.
I think that sort of intellectual, self-reflective, like this was the challenge for her to sort of crack open her shell and have her big vulnerable moment, and she didn't.
Yeah.
I think she did fine. I think she did better than, not than the winner and not than Asia. Mm-hmm. Although I don't think the winner did that well either. I thought Asia did the best, but I think she did well enough to not be in the bottom.
Yeah.
And then I think the lip sync was close enough that the fact that one of them had already, this is their third lip sync, usually means it's time to go. So I think Rue was pissed.
Okay, gotcha.
That's my take. But I'm a big Ms. Cracker fan. I look forward to seeing her on All Stars.
You're right, exactly. I think she's great.
When Valentina's on. Oh, you'll meet Valentina.
Oh, God,
I'd like to keep it on.
I cannot wait.
You're going to, it's quite the thing. Okay, so our list. So, the most valuable players of the Ryan Murphy-verse, of the Ryan Murphy Repertory Company. We had some rules. We did not include anybody who has only done one Ryan Murphy joint, and again, we were not counting the normal heart. That means some of the obvious MVPs are not going to be on this list. There's no Sterling K. Brown. There's no Courtney B. Vance, although that could change because apparently he's going to be in American Crime Story Katrina. There's no Judith Light. There's no Cody Fearn. There's no Amber Riley, who I loved on Glee. There's no Jane Lynch or Chris Colfer. There's no Jolie Richardson. There's no Susan Sarandon.
Yeah.
If somebody was in one thing, they're not here. Also, if they were in one thing and then like had a cameo in something else, They're also not here.
Yeah.
So we focused really on people who have done, it doesn't necessarily have to be more than one title, because that's the beauty of the repertory seasons, right?
Yeah.
There are people who have done nothing but American Horror Story who have played 7, 8, 9 roles for Ryan Murphy at this point.
Totally counts.
Yeah, and that's really cool. So I thought we could talk a little bit before we jump in about some of the people who were like right on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody in this bunch that you would have really liked to see make the list, Clint?
That's a good question. I think Emma Roberts. She made a really big impression in the seasons of American Horror Story that I have seen. Like season 2. She's in season 2, right? Or is she just, did she just premiere in season 3?
Coven.
So it was Coven and Freak Show. Like she made a really big impression on me there. And I know she was one of the big players in Scream Queens, mm-hmm. but I haven't seen it. But
she's fun.
Yeah, she's fun. She has a really great energy about her. I really enjoy watching her on screen. I think she and just Taysa Farmiga should do other things together. Should just do a bunch of things together. Like that's another person who almost made it. Probably was mm-hmm. Taysa Farmiga. Yeah. So I really like her, and I think she's just a beautiful presence in Ryan Murphy shows. I think she gets the Ryan Murphy sort of vernacular.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. What about you?
She's a good queen bee. I was really bummed to bump Adina Porter down the list. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, part of that is because I haven't seen any of Cult, and she's also playing a role in Cult, so we may revise this once we actually get on to that season. But she is really great in Roanoke, which is the season of the show I have seen her in.
Mm-hmm.
The same is true of Cheyenne Jackson, who is really great in Roanoke. But who I don't think has really, and he's also pretty good in Hotel, but I don't think he's really gotten his Ryan Murphy moment yet.
Mm-hmm.
I am a Lady Gaga defender in the Ryan Murphy verse. I think she is fine as the Countess. She has some great moments. She wears clothes like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
But she's fine as the Countess in Hotel. What she's really good in is Roanoke, when she's playing this crazy hill witch. She's mostly just there in footage, but she is terrifying and it is delicious.
Nice.
And I also, right up at the 11th hour, decided to not include John Carroll Lynch,
yeah.
who is absolutely the best part of Freak Show, who also plays one really memorable role in Hotel when he sort of cameos as John Wayne Gacy, terrifying John Wayne Gacy.
Mm-hmm.
And then apparently Twisty the Clown returns later. But I just didn't think that was quite enough. Also want to sort of tip our hats to Lea Michele.
Yeah.
He was great in Scream Queens and was great in Glee.
Yeah.
Even when they just gave her a bunch of bullshit to do. but man, in that first season of Glee, she wrung a lot of tears out of me.
Yeah.
I think about her doing Rihanna's Take a Bow in the pilot quite yeah. often. She's really good.
It was a breakout role for her. Yeah. And I think she was sort of the soul of that show a little bit.
Chris Colfer is another person I would love to have included if he had done more than one project.
Right.
There is an episode where he does Rose's turn. It's maybe my favorite scene from Glee,
uh-huh.
but it's Kurt's turn. Everything's coming up Kurt, and everything's coming up Hummel. It's delicious, and it's so sad and upsetting. But then later they do Judy and Barbara's Happy Days,
okay.
And it is fucking amazing.
Nice.
Also, Leslie Jordan, who is so good in Coven, and is also, or who is so good in Roanoke, but also appears in Coven. Matt mm-hmm. Bomer, who's done a lot of Ryan Murphy stuff, but again, I just don't think he's had the role yet.
Matt Bomer, Cheyenne Jackson, the two entries in the coterie of similar-looking Ryan Murphy
cast
players.
It's a long list.
He has a type.
Part of why Evan Peters is so good, I think, is he
doesn't fit the type.
He does not fit the type.
Good for him.
Yeah. So we would love to hear how wrong we are. If you have thoughts about those people who should have made the list. I would be really glad to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
The least represented show on this list, I think, is Popular.
Yeah.
I think Popular and Scream Queens, and I guess The New Normal, are all at a zero. The most is American Horror Story.
American
Horror Stories all over this stuff. So let's just jump on this list, shall we, Clint?
We shall.
Tell us who is number 15.
Our number 15 is Dot Jones, who was, like, I think for 5 or 6 seasons on Glee as Coach Beast.
3-time Emmy nominee.
Yeah.
For Glee.
Which is great. And she's such a fascinating, unique presence. I mean, she doesn't look like a movie star. I mean, she was a track star. She was an athlete before this. I think I saw that she had like a... she was like an arm wrestling champion, which I think is cool.
It's cool.
She won her first arm wrestling world championship at 19 years old and went on to win. She's a 15-time arm wrestling champion, mm-hmm. which I think is so cool. And so, I mean, she played a really interesting role in Glee as, I mean, you know, obviously the sort of stereotypical vision of like of a female like gym coach, but
with such sensitivity.
Yeah, incredible sensitivity, surprisingly beautiful voice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like I watched a couple of like the duets that she's done that she did over the show like this morning when I was prepping for this, and yeah, and so I just, she really has a really fun presence, and I think it's more evidence of Ryan Murphy being able to take those chances to cast unconventional looking or unconventional, you know, unconventionally acting people to do his shows. Mm-hmm. And it's great. Yeah.
She we, to be fair, did a 3-episode arc on Nip Tuck and mm-hmm. has guested once on American Horror Story. So she is right on the edge.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's so good as Coach Beast, and there was relatively little Glee representation, and that sort of pushed her over the top for us. But yeah. Also, even though she was handed some of the, like, most bullshit storylines,
yeah.
And every time I was watching the show and she was on, I felt for her. And she was very funny, and it's an incredibly compassionate, empathetic performance. And mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. And Dot Marie Jones, 3-time Emmy nominee.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
It's great. It's amazing.
Like, it's one of those things where, like, I know for a fact that probably young Dot Jones never imagined that she would be in that position. And that the fact that she is fills me with a lot of joy.
Yeah, I hope that she's going to end up on future seasons of his stuff, because obviously she's still in rotation, mm-hmm. And I would love to see more of her. That is also true of the number 14 person on our list, who has who last showed up in Cult. I have not seen her episode in Cult, in the episode that Dot Marie Jones was in, actually, which is also the Lena Dunham episode.
Okay.
Valerie Solanas died for your sins, scumbag.
Huh.
Jamie Brewer.
Yes.
Who has been in American Horror Story off and on since the very beginning. My favorite character that she's played is her character from the first season, Addie, mm-hmm. Adelaide.
I was a big fan of her coven character. I thought she was fun with, yes. like the coterie of witches. Yeah. Yeah.
Jamie Brewer is an actor with Down syndrome. She's also been a model mm-hmm. because she's beautiful.
Yeah.
And she's done plenty of work elsewhere. She's got 2 credits in pre-production right now, which I'm excited about. But she's just so fucking good on American Horror Story. And I think that...
Drop dead funny.
So funny. She's great hilarious. Timing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she was so good in Coven. And I think one of the most compelling parts of the very first season of American Horror Story, which I want to call Murder House. Is that what it's called?
Yes, it's called Murder House.
Is it called
House?
Murder
yeah.
House?
I like to call it.
I keep thinking it's called Home Invasion, but that's that episode. There's an episode called Home Invasion.
Yeah. I like to call it Dylan McDermott masturbating in front of a window while nude and crying.
Yeah.
I think it was the working title.
It's a good working title.
Mm-hmm.
But God, yeah, she is really, really good in Coven as
very,
well.
Very, very true.
I'm so glad that Jamie Brewer made the cut.
She deserves it.
I just love her. She's just great.
No, she's great.
All right. Speaking of people who are great,
mm-hmm.
who's number 13?
Let's do Kate Mara. Sometimes I think the less appreciated of the Mara sisters, because Rooney gets a lot more art house cachet, mm-hmm. but I think Ryan Murphy uses Kate Mara really well. I think she was in the first season of American Horror Story. I think she had a small mini arc on Nip Tuck. And she's obviously now in Pose. And I think she does a lot with a little, especially in Pose, but she gets a lot of really nice, cool, meaty stuff to do in Murder House, mm-hmm. Which I think is the one season of American Horror Story she was in. Mm-hmm. And just sort of as the ghost of this girl that Dylan McDermott has killed, and she becomes this vengeful spirit. And she's really good at turning on the meanness when she has to. And then, you know, in Pose, I'm looking forward to future episodes really do a little bit more with her. Right now she's sort of the long-suffering wife. She's kind of like the early Mad Men Betty Draper character, sort of left behind dealing with the ways in which suburban white domesticity stifles her a little bit. I'm looking forward to her getting more focus, but I know that when she gets it, she can run with it, and Ryan Murphy usually gives her that eventually. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, she's a great actress. I'm really glad that she's returned for Pose. I'm glad to see more of her under Ryan Murphy's spicy buffalo
I wing. Cannot imagine. The interesting thing about where she is in Pose, and Clint and I have seen the same 4 episodes.
Yeah, first 4 episodes.
and we won't spoil it here, but there is, and it, this is suggested from her very first shot in the pilot, which is similar in some ways to the first appearance of Betty Draper in Mad Men. Mm-hmm. She's got kind of a Betty Draper thing going, and that continues. But I cannot imagine that Ryan Murphy being Ryan Murphy and this team of writers being this team of writers, that it's going to stay there.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very interested to see where they take her.
She's
but
part
even
of the
in these four episodes, she's terrific.
Yeah.
And
she has some great scenes with Ginger Vanderbeek in like episode three, I think. Yeah.
She is just terrific in that first season of Horror Story.
Yeah,
as well.
She really is. It's a scene stealer.
Good old Kate Mara.
Yeah, but
pushed in
of,
front of a train.
Yeah. Oh, R.I.P. in peace. But speaking of great people in Murder House and elsewhere, who is our number 12?
That would be Mrs. Coach.
Yeah.
She of the fabulous hair, Connie Britton.
Connie Britton.
I've been waiting for Connie Britton to get to do something as good as Murder House for Ryan Murphy since it happened. Her appearance in the first season of American Crime Story is brief, but great.
So great.
She's very good. But really, with this one, it's all about Murder House, and she cements that fucking ludicrous storyline in something really real and upsetting.
Yeah.
And does a really great job. And the little tiny bits and pieces, dribs and drabs, I've seen of 911, she's also great in. Plus,
yeah,
she's got that hair.
Right, exactly. And then the first season, she has that, she gets the opportunity to do that kind of 1970s horror movie protagonist thing where she's the sort of the woman under siege in her own home, like mm-hmm. Shades of The Exorcist, Shades of Rosemary's Baby, especially that one particular scene with the Gimp. And but I really love her brief moments in American Crime Story as Nicole's friend, I forget her name, but the one who decides to like sort of sell her story into a book. And there's that scene with the booksellers where Connie Britton is just vamping, like she's just owning it. She's like just eating, casually eating this whole time while she's just dropping all this hot goss about her dead friend in ways that, you know, she's performing this sympathy. She's, you know, she's trying to do a poor me thing while also performatively being like, oh, but Nicole, you know, the real tragedy was for her, even though she would give every guy in town a Brentwood hello, that kind of stuff. And then she has a great line. There's never a good time to find out your best friend's been murdered, but especially not 3 days into cocaine treatment. And it's just like, so even those individual scenes, like it's just, it's such a testament to what Connie Britton can do when Ryan Murphy just gives her just so much scenery to chew on. And it's beautiful. And I can't wait to see her in other things.
Same. And I'm very excited to catch up on 911, which sounds like my kind of bullshit. Speaking of your kind of bullshit, talk to us about number 11, Clint.
You mean the star of Snow Dogs and Boat Trip?
Yes, the star of Snow Dogs and Road Trip.
Boat Trip.
Ugh, my credentials.
God. I know, right? I'm talking, of course, about one Sir Cuba Gooding Jr., who was in Roanoke, and he was notably O.J. Simpson in The People vs. O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story, Season 1. I have not seen Roanoke, so I cannot speak to his performance, but I'm sure it's...
He's good. He's better in Roanoke than he is in The People vs. O.J.
Interesting.
And I think he's good in The People vs. O.J.
He could be a bit of a cipher. Like, he has to do a lot with a little.
Mm-hmm. He was not perfectly cast, and one of the things I remember most fondly about The People vs. O.J. is, like, it's a really good lesson in not judging a piece of art based on, like, one or two arbitrary cast members, because I was not alone in this. When this first got announced that Ryan Murphy was doing the O.J. Simpson trial and that Cuba Gooding Jr. and David Schwimmer were going to be in it, I was like, what?
Bullshit is this?
Hard pass. And then I watched, because the early buzz was pretty good, and I was like, okay,
yeah,
I guess I'll check this out. And then, of course, it was like this extraordinary feat of television, one of the great series of the last 10 years. And his is not the best performance in it. It's not the fifth best performance in it. But despite the fact that he is not a perfect fit for this, I think he resists a lot of the impersonation shit.
Yeah, it's not impersonation.
It's not.
Just,
there's a little like vocal thing, a little, but just a little. And instead, it's just watching somebody who is somewhere between like self-delusion and extraordinary lying ability, and it kind of waffles.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. And he and David Schwimmer in particular, and David Schwimmer is another person, I want him to do way more shit with Ryan Murphy, because he was great as Rob Kardashian. Great.
John Travolta was great. He's not a person who gets to be great.
He was fun.
He was fun to watch.
He was fun
to watch. Best eyebrows on TV.
He was in a different show than everybody else, but he was definitely entertaining. But David Schwimmer was like sort of the heart of the series, which is nuts, because we'll get to Sarah Paulson, obviously. Mm-hmm. Sterling K. Brown was so good. Courtney B. Vance was so good. And then there was David Schwimmer, like, quietly just breaking your heart. Mm-hmm. Juice. Like, and when watching him, whatever, this is about Cuba, but watching him sort of become disillusioned with what was happening was really moving.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, going back to Cuba, I think one thing that it sort of ran through my brain that I think complicates his performance as OJ in a really interesting way is remembering his Jerry Maguire character.
Yeah.
And so in some weird, almost perverse ways, it feels like a play on that. Like, mm-hmm. if a play on that character, and sort of Ryan Murphy casting him, understanding the cultural baggage around Cuba and like the characters he's played, and knowing that somewhere in the back of your lizard brain, like, show me the money's going to be there. And so in a way, it, you know, and maybe, I don't know, maybe this is too far, but like, OJ, like, he's not just playing OJ, he's playing this darker side of his Jerry Maguire character. And like, I don't know, the ways in which the casting itself plays with those cultural perceptions is really, really interesting.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to, I mean, I need to go back and revisit Roanoke if he's as good as you say.
Yeah. It's, Roanoke is a very interesting season because it's bisected. Mm-hmm. And just when the first half is, I mean, it's terrifying, but just as it's starting to outstay its welcome, it ends and then it becomes something else entirely. And if you don't already know what this twist in the middle of the season is, I don't want to spoil it for you, but everything after that point gets so much more interesting.
Okay.
And then it runs out of steam. But like the two or three episodes after the switch, they're like, what the actual fuck? And that's when he is great.
Nice.
I
think sometimes we forget he's an Oscar winner.
Yeah. He made some really bad choices.
He did.
Just in terms of projects, but he is, I can't wait to see future things he does.
Yes, absolutely.
We will go on to the rest of our list in just a second because one of us probably has to pee. So here is something to listen to.
We once again call this meeting to order.
Fed and watered and ready to return to our top 10 most valuable Ryan Murphy players.
Yes.
I guess it's me now.
Yeah. I talked about the Cuba.
I'd like to talk about an actor who, when he showed up on American Horror Story, I went, ugh. And who has since become much more valuable. And to his credit, to Finn Wittrock's credit,
yes,
I do not think the giant eye roll sound you just heard is his fault. But his character in Freak Show was insufferable.
Yeah.
And a big part of why that season was such a bummer for me. The other being that they fucking killed off the most interesting character in like episode 6.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any damn sense.
And it's also just such a bummer swan song for Jessica Lange on that show too.
She'll probably be back eventually. But
yeah.
Well, and she's doing, I mean, she did Feud and presumably there's more Jessica Lange in our future. But yes, it was a real bummer. Although I did love the Bowie.
Yeah.
Anyway, Finn Wittrock doing the best he could in that first American Horror Story
God
season.
God bless him.
Good in subsequent seasons, but just terrific in the second season of American Crime Story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jeff Trail. His Don't Ask, Don't Tell episode is one of the highlights of the season.
Yeah.
His scenes with Cody Fearn are some of the best of the season. He was great with Darren Criss. That pool party scene, the birthday party episode, is just excruciatingly uncomfortable, and he is a big part of that, balancing like exasperation and frustration and embarrassment and the desire to please with like starting to see through this facade. Just like a really thoughtful, charismatic performance.
Yeah.
That even though he's part of the Ryan Murphy like Ken doll brand, I think sort of sets him apart.
And there's some variations I think that set him apart too. I mean, he has a very interesting look. He's a very unconventionally a handsome man, and I think that's part of why he was cast the way he was in Freak Show, because I think Freak Show, for better or for worse, his role allowed him to show off sort of a shark-like sociopathy.
Sexless.
Yeah.
Yeah, which of course is not actually what it is, but he felt like...
Yeah. He's very good at playing that empty sort of serial killer myopicness.
Yeah.
That I think is a really interesting dimension to his abilities as an mm-hmm. actor. But the fact that subsequent seasons of Horror Story and especially Jeff Trail and Crime Story allowed him to tap into those new dimensions, and like having someone who looks like they're a serial killer actually like be this play these very protected, you know, guarded, but like, you know, very sympathetic and multi-layered mm-hmm. characters is really, really, it's a testament to him. And I think it's a testament to Ryan Murphy discovering Finn Wittrock a little bit and learning what he can do mm-hmm. and writing roles to cater to that.
He was also pretty good as Rudolph Valentino. That was fun. And is another one who has a zillion projects in post-production right now. One of them is, speaking of Barry Jenkins, is Barry Jenkins' first follow-up to Moonlight, which is his own adaptation of the James Baldwin novel, If Beale Street Could Talk.
Nice.
That puts him in really good company. Mm-hmm. That cast includes Pedro Pascal, Diego Luna, Regina King, Brian Tyree Henry, Dave Franco, Coleman Domingo, who I fucking love, Doris McCarthy. It's a really, really good cast. Mm-hmm. So he is in good company there.
He's also good at, he's typecast as douchebags quite a lot. I mean, The Big Short. And
played Demetrius in A Midsummer Night's Dream, so douchebag.
Yeah, also true. Also, Landline, the indie movie with Jenny Slate.
Oh, yeah.
He was deliciously sleazy in that. And so he's a really interesting performer. And I feel like without Ryan Murphy, he wouldn't have the career he has. And so I think we should all be thankful.
He was also in Torchwood?
Was he?
He did an episode of Torchwood. Is he British?
No. What was it, like the American season, maybe? Was it Miracle Day?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Sorry, I just fell down. Yeah. IMDb page. I was so excited.
Right.
Anyway, he is great. I can't wait to see what he does. But God, he as Jeff Trail. In the apparently underrated second season of American Crime Story.
Really?
Yeah. People seem really lukewarm on it, and I don't think it's a perfect season, but most Ryan Murphy seasons aren't.
Yeah.
And God, there are some incredible performances in there.
Yeah.
And some episodes that are pretty close to perfect. That Don't Ask, Don't Tell episode is pretty close to perfect.
Yeah.
House by the Lake is pretty close to perfect. Like, it's just, there's a lot of really good shit.
Yeah.
Finn Wittrock.
I know, right?
Doing good. You are
good on him.
You are good on you, buddy. You creeped me out a lot, and not in a good way.
You are good at acting.
That's behind us now. Speaking of behind us now, wielding maybe a large knife, you want to tell us who's number 9 on this list?
Oh my God, I want to talk about my favorite Ryan Murphy character that didn't have a body.
We might have put her too low.
Possibly. Because it kind of feels like she's maybe the new matriarch of American Horror Story.
Yeah.
After Lang's departure. But this is Kathy Bates. Kathy Bates, legend of stage and screen. Current star of the Netflix TV series Disjointed. That is the Chuck Lorre series taking place in a pot dispensary that my mom loves.
Well,
but you know, they can't all be winners. But
make that money, Kathy.
Exactly. And you know what? She's fun in it. And Kathy Bates is always great, especially in American Horror Story. She made a huge impression in Coven as Marie Delphine LaLaurie.
Oh,
as a racist Southern Belle witch.
Oh, terrifying.
Who gets her head cut off and like has to like hang out with Gabrielle Sidibe, sort of torturing her with like progressive stuff.
Yep.
I love those scenes between those two actresses, and it's you know, even from then, like in Freak Show, she's fantastic. She's the bearded lady in Freak Show, right? Yeah. It's been forever. But yeah, she's fantastic in that as well. And she's been in future American Horror Story seasons. And she's also in
She was. She is one half of my favorite part of Hotel. Mm-hmm. The other half is number 7 of the same part. She's really, really great in Hotel. She is also just fucking terrifying in Roanoke.
Yeah.
Where first she plays Thomasin the Butcher White and then Agnes Mary Winstead. And both of them are just... you know what, Clint? Just take a second. We got to find a picture of her in fucking Roanoke, because you have to see her as fucking hill witch.
Is she holding a cleaver at a certain point?
Probably.
Yes, I see it.
Yep, that's her.
Man, she looks so friggin' scary in those teeth.
Oh, she's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, nightmare walking. She's deeply, I'm like paging through misery, 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 misery. God, there are lots of misery. Bad Santa, Revolutionary Road, Bad Santa. Great Gilly Hopkins. There we go, American Horror Story.
Beautiful. Yeah, she's got that fire in her eyes, too. And yeah. she knows, it sounds weird to say, but she's a very tooth-focused actor. She knows how to use that grin, that grimace, as best as she can. And she's just, I don't know, she's just a national treasure. And I almost feel like it's a layup to include her here, just because she's one of, I mean, this list includes some of television and film's greatest actresses.
Yeah.
So it's almost too easy. But especially, you know, using her skills in something as dreamlike and theatrical and sort of melodramatic in the best way is American Horror Story. Yep. Kathy Bates just knocks it out of the park.
And she's good in Feud, too. I can't wait to see what other she's going to be in the next season of American Horror Story as well, mm-hmm. it looks like, which we don't know what that is yet. But odds are she's going to be a damn delight. So that should be pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of pretty great.
Yeah. Let's talk about Dennis O'Hare,
Dennis
shall
O'Hare.
We?
Dennis O'Hare. There's a little tiny wrinkle in Dennis O'Hare in that his best role in American Horror Story is playing Elizabeth Taylor, a transgender woman who does not identify as a transgender woman. She's just a woman. She never says transgender, which is, I mean, the whole point, right?
Yeah.
But it's... There's
it still
like,
raises a lot of issues about cis people playing playing opposite
and
genders.
And this happened before that conversation really spiked.
Yeah.
But I have to say, most of the, when you watch your fucking Dallas Buyers Clubs and whatever this movie Matt Bomer is doing, and countless others where a cisgender person is playing a transgender person, there's just something about it that feels really like, give me an Oscar.
Yeah.
And that's not the case here. I know you didn't watch Hotel, but as Liz Taylor, it's...
I think she might have been in the first episode. So I think I saw glimpses of her Liz Taylor, of his Liz Taylor.
Just heartbreaking. It's a deeply felt, extremely compassionate performance. And he and Kathy Bates are so good together. But Dennis O'Hare is one of those actors in Ryan Murphy's stable where you sort of forget how many parts he's played.
Yeah,
because
he's
just
such a mainstay.
Well, and he disappears. Like, he just totally fucking disappears in all of these. Like
the burned man in the first season.
Right?
And yeah.
Spaulding in Coven.
Yeah.
Like, fucking terrifying, heartbreaking old Spaulding.
Yeah, and working with Emma Roberts as like the con artist in Freak Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just really, really great.
He's really good at playing that kind of gothic horror stuff. I mean, he comes from True Blood and that kind of stuff.
Well, longtime stage actor and playwright.
Yeah, also true, but
won a Tony for Take Me Out. I think he snagged a couple more. Is just like one of the great American actors of our time.
Mm-hmm.
But like a pretty significant percentage of his TV work has been for Ryan Murphy.
Yeah.
Also, he played a judge in The Good Wife-iverse. which means that he has also shown up in The Good Fight, which is great. He is another one with a very busy schedule coming up. He's going to be in the adaptation of The Goldfinch, which I am super excited about.
Great.
But Dennis O'Hare is just like a goddamn treasure. He's so good.
Very true.
I cannot wait for him to show up in more things. Also, terrific in just like a little recurring role in This Is Us. Speaking of Sterling K. Brown and
Indeed.
Other people who've been on This Is Us.
What?
I'm a big, big fan. And I sort of feel like they are so good in Hotel together that these can be kind of shared. It's like a 9-8 tie because they're amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
But he is so good in Coven and so sort of unsung as one of the mainstays of the Ryan Murphyverse that I feel like he gets a teeny edge there.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of people who are great in Coven especially, who is our number 7 pick?
Balenciaga!
The queen of weird, like Frances Conroy, just manages to do just some strange
Jesus
stuff.
Christ.
I think she embraces the American Horror Story more than a lot of actors.
Well, because she knows exactly what the fuck is up.
Yeah.
That's a woman who knows all, like, exactly what her skill set is and the best way to deploy all the individual parts of it at all times. Have you seen The Tale yet?
No, I need
to
see it.
Oh my God, she's so good in The Tale.
Mm-hmm. I have seen Catwoman, though. Is it just as good?
It's Yes.
Okay, good. That's a relief.
Frances Conroy, you know, at this point is probably still best known for Six Feet Under.
Yeah. And deservedly so. She's fantastic. We just did a rewatch of that.
She is just a treasure. But she has been so good throughout American Horror Story. She is terrific in Coven, obviously, but she is great in Murder House season when she's the old half of the redhead. She is just really terrific in that. She's great in Asylum, which we haven't talked about much yet, but she's really, really good in Asylum.
Which is weird because Asylum, I think, might be my favorite season of Horror Story. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the best, I think.
Well, it's easy to forget the people who are not people at the top of our list and because they so dominate that season.
That's true. We'll get to them soon too.
But she is also really great in Freak Show. Like, she makes that Finn Wittrock storyline work way better than poor old Finn Wittrock does.
I was just about to say, like, you know, she absolutely, as that classic sort of Munchausen-y mom,
mm-hmm.
she's brilliant. She just embraces her quirks and her unconventionality so well, and she just so many great character quirks. Yeah. She's so great.
She also shows up very memorably for exactly one episode of Roanoke, in which she is just a nightmare, just terrifying, and then has a two-episode arc in Cult.
Uh-huh.
God, is she in all of the seasons? Is she the one?
She's not in first season.
Yeah, she is. In Murder House? Oh, she's the redhead.
Oh, what am I thinking
right?
of? Right? I think because the only two people who have been in every season have been Evan Peters and Sarah Paulson, I think.
Well, let's see.
Season. Yeah.
I mean, so she's in Asylum. She's in Coven. Oh, she's not in Hotel.
Oh, well, she took a break.
Is Sarah Paulson in Hotel?
I think so.
So we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Gee, I wonder if Sarah Paulson's on this list.
What?
Anyway, Frances Conroy. Yeah. Which is your favorite of all of the Frances Conroys?
Oh, it has to be Coven.
Yeah,
for
me too.
Yeah, no, it's just with her glass eye and everything. It just allows her to get fucking weird, and it's just the fact that the way she's able to embrace
the costume design. Oh, God.
I almost feel like the costumes sometimes wear the characters in the best possible way. Like, as soon as you put that on, I don't know if you can help but inhabit those characters.
Yeah. Well, she knows what to do with clothes.
100%.
She's so fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of you know what? Yeah, that works. Yeah. Speaking of clothes transforming, helping to transform a performance, why don't you talk to us about number six?
Number six is someone who I wouldn't have known of apart from American Horror Story, which is Lily Rabe.
Yeah, theater actor. She's done a lot of fucking theater.
Fantastic. An absolute mainstay of American Horror Story. I don't think she was in the first season. But no, she wasn't. She wasn't the first season. I'm dumbass. But in Asylum, I think she really breaks out as Sister Mary Eunice.
Oh, she's terrifying.
And
in Asylum.
And she's in Freak Show. She's the same character in Freak Show too. When who is it? Goes to the asylum. Like, they send the pinheads to the asylum. Yeah. And she shows up the same character. So another, you know, interconnectivity there. But Lily Rabe, again, much like Frances Conroy, is able to roll with the gothic horror weirdness punches really, really well, especially as Misty Day and like that one scene. Like, she's the whole Stevie Nicks thing.
She makes that there's no
way. No one else could make that work.
Like, it shouldn't work at all.
No.
And it almost doesn't. Like, people are very mixed on Coven. I am very pro Coven, even though Ryan Murphy hates the word camp. I love camp, and I feel like it walks that, like, it just is always on the verge of too much, and sometimes it is actively too much. But she makes that, like, she believes in Stevie Nicks to, like, the marrow of her bones, and it's
the deepest
moving.
Yeah.
Somehow it's moving. It doesn't make any goddamn sense at all.
Yeah.
She's also really great in Roanoke, but again, I don't want to spoil too much for you there.
And then in Hotel, she has a couple episodes.
Yeah, she
right?
plays Eileen Wuornos.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't noticed, there is an episode of Hotel where a bunch of serial killers show up. So,
oh, is that right?
Yeah. So you're John Wayne Gacy's, you're Eileen Wuornos's.
You're John's Wayne Gacy.
Yes, you're John's Wayne Gacy.
Thank you.
You're John Wayne's Gacy.
Oh, and she did a voice in my pick for next week, which we'll get to in a second.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Speaking of people who have been in a lot of seasons of American Horror Story and beyond, what is our number five pick?
Ooh, child, things are going to get Evan Peters.
Peters.
I don't know where that's going. You know how sometimes you have this thing where you are totally irrationally kind of proud of certain actors when they do really well.
Oh my God.
Like, it's none of your business. It has nothing to do with you. And it's just personal investment and you can't even really explain it. That's how I feel about Evan Peters. Every time he's good, I'm like, oh, honey. Good
is it kind for of like you. A, yeah, it's a good for him kind of
good
feeling.
Good for you. And he, I mean, so he gets a lot of the wildest swings from Murphy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're like, that's what you're giving him? That's yeah. How a particularly Hotel. He's like not particularly well cast as role in Hotel, but he's still terrifying and he does a really good job. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he's very disappointingly the straight man in an American Horror Story season, I think, like especially Asylum. Yes. And Freak Show a little bit.
Well, I mean, Freak Show, he does have a giant lobster claw.
It's true, but I mean...
that he learns to pleasure women with.
True.
And then he becomes basically like a sex worker with his giant lobster claw hand.
But I think
and then he's got all that shit with his dad.
But I think it says something about how weird Freak Show is that even then, I feel like he's the straight man.
I think... I wouldn't call him the straight man. He's or the like romantic lead.
The romantic lead, perhaps. Yes. That is the...
But he can do weird really well, too.
Oh,
I still think that my favorite season, my favorite Evan Peters role in American Horror Story is the first one.
Yeah.
I think he's terrific.
The episode where they depict the school shooting. And yeah,
oh,
it's
God.
Heartbreaking
he's
and it's
very
terrifying.
Upsetting.
Yeah.
And he really sells all of that.
Mm-hmm.
He is apparently excellent in Cult, which, again, we have not seen yet.
Yeah.
Has he been in all of them? Is that the deal?
Yeah, I think
I'm
it's
trying
Evan
to remember
Peters
who
and
he was in.
A future pick. I've been in all of them.
You already said it.
I said it's fine. Sarah Paulson. I'm hoping people have short memories on this podcast.
So according to IMDb, he has been in 94 episodes, I think, of American Horror Story, but they are counting all of season 8, which obviously hasn't been announced yet, and we don't know when. So this would just be them going off of the announced cast, which, by the way, let's check, shall we?
We'll take a little dip.
Let's look at what their plot under wraps is what it says. Kathy Bates, Joan Collins. I did know that. Billy Eichner again.
Yeah.
So he'll be entering our recurring whatever. Leslie Grossman, who is also in Popular, so she'll be entering the recurring. Cheyenne Jackson, Billy Lord, Sarah Paulson, Evan Peters, Adina Porter.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the next time we update this, odds are that Adina Porter is making that list too.
There you go.
Joan Collins.
Wow.
I did read that.
That's a surprise to me. What's the last thing she did?
God, I don't know.
She's joined the cast in an unspecified capacity.
Well.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was miscast but really scary in Hotel. He was really great in Roanoke. Your mileage may vary on Freak Show, mostly because my mileage varies a lot on Freak Show. But he did a very nice job. He's good in Coven. He's good, if like relatively low key, in Asylum. And then I think is just fucking terrific in Murder House.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And we must mention that he is in Pose. He's the other Ryan Murphy recurring that is in Pose.
I'm really impressed with his work in Pose. I think that it would be easy playing a part like that to make those scenes. He, in the first two episodes, I don't want to spoil anything in later episodes, but in the first two episodes, almost all of his scenes are with Angel, played by India Moore.
Yeah, who is fantastic. And they have electric chemistry together.
They do.
By the way, if you want to read more about Pose, I did write a piece on Consequence of Sound.
Yeah.
You can find it at Consequence of Sound.
But those scenes are always about her, even though he, and that's a obviously
even when it's
a
confronting things about him,
even and that's a testament to the writing too. Even though the person who's experiencing the most internal conflict is his character, it's never the tortured white boy at all.
Mm-hmm.
He might be tortured, but the scenes are about her and her experience with him, and that's the mark of great writing and great direction. But I think it's also a testament to the way he's playing the role. It's very underplayed, it's very reserved, and he's very focused on her, and that sort of shapes the scenes, I think.
Yeah, and his non-India Moore scenes, like he has a lot of hard work to do, sort of elevating what is, you know, again, like with Pose, the most interesting stuff is the ball culture stuff and the houses. And then occasionally you have to cut back to him in Trump Tower with the very Ryan Murphy-esque digs at like 2016, 2018 Trump and all that stuff and the Madman stuff. But when he's with India Moore, his character shines. And I'm looking forward to the two of them, especially growing with the show as it goes.
I think he's doing really great work. He is also great in a movie I really liked that seems to be pretty divisive. American X-Men Animals.
Sorry.
American Animals, which I wrote a review of at Consequences of Sound, which you can read, but he is great in it.
Agreed.
Really, really great. So, Evan Peters.
Evan Peters.
And his little Moppet face.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of other dudes that broke out in really big ways on Ryan Murphy shows, we should talk about our number four pick. Shantui.
One of the very best performances of the year.
Yes.
You know what? I know exactly how I want to talk about this pick.
Before you met me, I was all right, but things were kind of heavy. You brought me to life. Now every February, you'll be my Valentine. Valentine. Let's go.
Wow. It got me.
Didn't it?
It got me.
I remember watching that really vividly the first time it happened and the first time it happened when it aired.
Mm.
Because first of all, I mean, it was just they were obviously writing a love interest for Kurt and it was Glee and the gay kid was going to get a Dreamboat love interest. And when the fuck does that ever like then specifically, when was that ever going to happen?
Right.
So that but then like they just couldn't it's so romantic in like a boys school like little gay boys at a boys school kind of way and he is such a dreamboat and it sounds so amazing
and who are we talking about?
Darren Criss.
It's too bad that this was the one role he ever did.
I know, can you even believe it?
I know.
Remind me who played Andrew Cunanan?
Darren Criss.
Oh, right. This warm, loving dreamboat that we all fell in love with.
Yeah.
Who then came back briefly for like a really butthead hipster American Horror Story cameo where he was perfectly obnoxious and that was all he was really required to
do.
And then get killed. And then fucking Andrew Cunanan.
Just snatching up all the Emmys.
Blaine the Warbler. Andrew Cunanan.
Just two opposite ends.
It's I wrote spectrum. A piece for COS back in January that we'll reshare on Facebook or something, specifically about how Ryan Murphy's faith in actors pays off when somebody, especially if it's somebody that, and he was getting work before then, Darren Criss started to first really get work as a part of Star Kid, which did essentially musical parodies. He
I keep thinking of the Joseph Mazzello movie from the 90s. Oh.
He has a sort of similar career path to Rachel Bloom in that way, only he doesn't really work as a writer outside of music, but is also singer-songwriter.
Mm-hmm. Was it Potterless that he did?
Yeah, and a couple others. So he first sort of rose to prominence there, and then he booked Glee, and then it was like, boom, off to the races. But he's never gotten to do something like he got to in American Horror Story. And as much as I love Blaine the Warbler, and as good as he is in the show, even though he got some real bullshit storylines from time to time, but especially at the beginning, as good as he is, he never got to do something like this, and probably wouldn't make the list, but Andrew Cunanan is like a top five Ryan Murphy performance.
Absolutely. 100%.
Arguably, no, probably top five because the people ahead of him on this list have parts that would also be in the category. So we'll say top five, but arguably somewhere high in that top five.
But I don't know if there's any other like single character that holds up a single season of a Ryan Murphy thing as well as Darren Criss' Andrew Cunanan.
And there are other great performances in Versace.
But I think it also speaks to like his love of ensembles too.
Yes.
But just especially Darren Criss, like he is the showstopper in American Crime Story. And funny enough, we talk about how Blaine the Warbler is such a departure, but I think there's like elements to Blaine the Warbler that also play into his perception and like the how we receive Andrew Cunanan as a character too.
Well, Andrew Cunanan would love to be seen the way that Blaine the Warbler is depicted here, right? Like a romantic, classy, worldly figure, charming figure.
The people whose eyes are glued to him, you know.
Right. Whereas this performance, this and throughout, but specifically that introduction, just like radiates warmth and empathy and charm. And Andrew Cunanan radiates charm, but like not genuine charm.
Patrick Bateman-y sort of charm, where he's performing the same sort of things that Blaine does naturally.
Yes.
Where he thinks that he wants the same things. He wants to be loved. He wants to be, well, he wants to be famous too. And there's a calculation to the way he does it. And Darren Criss is able to show us the wheels turning without it feeling like a performance, if that makes sense. Like, I mean, it's just so you see every element of what Andrew Cannon is thinking and doing. Because he has such an open face, and it's such a, like a deep well of emotion in those eyes, but he can also deaden them when he needs to. It's just a phenomenal performance that, like, you know, in a lot of ways feels like it comes out of nowhere. Like, who saw this coming? No one did, which is why it's such a surprise.
When it was announced, I sort of suspected that he might be good.
Yeah,
because you could see, like you say, you can see like some sort of parallel. But from that first episode, that when he's just in the water and screaming, I was like, oh, all right, here we go.
Yeah.
And then it just got more complicated and interesting from there every episode. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens for him this Emmy Award season, when we get to Golden Globes as well, Screen Actors Guild, all that shit, because I think he was just remarkable. It's a really good year for TV, so who the fuck knows? But it's one of the performances of the year, to be sure.
Absolutely.
And like I said, one of the best Ryan Murphy performances.
Yeah. And again, like, you know, say what you will about Versace as a season. Again, like, I think the highs, I agree with you, the highs are really worth it, but just no matter what, it's a show-stopping performance.
Yeah,
and
I think the lows are like pretty ordinary.
Yeah,
lows.
The lows are
It's not anything like a low of American Horror Story.
Oh,
right?
100%.
It's like there's a little dip where it's not quite as cohesive, and that's about it. It's like a really amazing, amazing, amazing season of television, and he is absolutely the highlight.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, Darren Criss.
What can't you do?
This week, you can look for an interview with Darren Criss to run on our site. I got to spend some time talking to him about both Versace and the tour he's doing with Lea Michele. And it was really, really interesting. And the way he talked about Versace was great. And then at the end, we got to nerd out about schools of movement training in theater. If you want to hear us talk about Lecoq and like fucking viewpoints and Commedia, you look for that interview.
Oh, goody.
It was really fun. I asked him and he was like, how do you know that? He was like, oh, I have a theater degree. He was like,
yeah.
Okay, well, I've never been asked this before. Let's get started. We're talking about the way that because he very specifically based, and if you rewatch Versace, you'll be able to see it. The way Andrew moved changed a lot based on what he was doing. Sometimes he moves kind of like a shark, and sometimes it's like a cat, and sometimes it's a strut, and sometimes it's a glide. And I was just like, also, that's a wig.
Yeah, that's right. We talked about that. That's a wig.
It
still blows my mind.
That is a really good wig.
It's a super good wig.
Speaking of great wigs, you want to talk to us about number three?
I do. We're in the top three now, and I kind of feel like, to a certain extent, this is kind of the holy trinity of like amazing Ryan Murphy character actresses a little bit. And so
probably Kathy Bates is climbing the list.
Yeah, yeah. She's in the, if we extend it to a pyramid, she's the fourth leg in that pyramid, whatever that, I don't know how pyramids work. But
God, we might have to move Kathy Bates. Yeah. Listener, when you click on the link that comes along with this to read our report, it is totally possible that Kathy Bates will have gone up a couple of points.
We may have talked ourselves up a bit.
I think we maybe have.
Yeah, yeah.
Continue.
But in addition to Kathy Bates making a really big impression in Coven, guess who else did? One Dame Angela Bassett.
Yeah.
Who is great. And unfortunately, I think the only person, the only woman of color on this list, which is unfortunate, but she just owns it. She just owns, Marie Laveau. Yeah. In Coven. And she was in Freak Show as well.
One of my favorite parts of Freak Show.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's just, I mean, just what else can you say about Angela Bassett hasn't already been said? Bold. She always feels like she's just innately Angela Bassett while also playing a character. And I mean, she's one of the leads in 911.
She's very good in Hotel as the rival vampire to Lady Gaga's Countess. They have a very twisted backstory and are basically having a battle over mere mortals. And she is really great. And then she's also terrific in Roanoke. She is terrific. The bits and pieces I've seen of 911. Also, there is on the Hollywood Reporter is doing their whole gear up to the Emmys thing where they're pairing actors somewhat. It seems like they're putting some thought into it, but also it's a little bit like, these two? And then they pull them out of a hat. So there is a conversation you can watch between Laura Dern and Angela Bassett that will fucking slay you. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
I just think that she is another one who sort of gets the wavelength that Murphy is operating on.
Yeah.
I think it's part of why she was so great in Coven. There were some big pointed discussions about whether or not she was playing a stereotype or it was reductive. And I don't feel I'm super qualified to speak of that as a white woman. So that is for somebody else to discuss, but she sure looked like she was having a great time.
Yeah.
And then in Freak Show, which is my least favorite season of American Horror Story, she might be my favorite part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is saying something, because one and two are also both in Freak Show.
Also true.
But she is really, really great in it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, God, she's a legend.
Again, she was just in Black. She's still a movie star.
Yeah.
You know?
She's about to be in Mission Impossible Fallout.
Right. God, you know, what else can you say? Like, again, she's just a veteran of stage and screen.
Oscar nominee. Should have won that Oscar. Who won that year?
Which one was, what was she nominated
for? That
was
What's Love Got to Do with It. Hmm. Who won 1994? Here, I'm pulling it up. Who robbed our queen?
Holly Hunter.
Oh, well.
For The Piano.
God, that's a good year.
The Piano.
Holly Hunter, Emma Thompson, Deborah Winger, Stockard Channing, and Angela Bassett.
Speaking of awesome American Horror Story queens, why don't you take us through...
Speaking of canceled.
No, she's not canceled. She's not canceled. She's doing just fine.
Oh.
Who's our number two pick?
Oh, well, if we were to tally up the number of arguably number one Ryan Murphy performances.
Yeah.
If you were to the individual performances and make a list of just possible contenders for number one,
mm-hmm.
Angela Bassett would have one. Darren Criss would have one. Lily Rabe would have one. Frances Conroy would
maybe have two.
No, I don't think she'd have any.
Oh,
because she's not the best in Coven. She's not, because she most of her roles are supporting.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
Freak Show. No, because Angela Bassett is the best part of Freak Show.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, Jessica Lange would have like five.
Exactly.
And that is our number two, Jessica Lange.
Jessica Lange. Oh, she's. Well, it feels like American Horror Story was made for her a little bit,
yeah.
And I don't know if the show has been the same since her departure. I totally understand why she left. It was sort of time, but even in Freak Show. She is absolutely nailing it. Like you said, like, especially with the David Bowie
the
things.
The same fucking part.
Yeah.
I understand why she was frustrated, but.
Yeah. But I mean, even like from season one on, like she's just, I feel like Ryan Murphy just tailored, 100% tailored every single role she played for her, knowing exactly what she can do and how she can steal the scenes that she's in. And there's always this overarching sentiment to her characters, right? Where these are these women who are sort of fearing obsolescence and old age and death, and to a certain extent, and sometimes fighting them off in very interesting ways, whether it's through religion or trying to build a legacy, or by resurrecting the dead, basically, or she's always the matriarch for these institutions that are rotting from the inside, and she's always trying to keep them together, no matter what. So like, to a certain extent, a lot of the Jessica Lange American Horror Story characters are variations on a theme. But no one could keep them so consistent while also playing those variations on a theme for all they're worth, quite the way Jessica Lange could.
Well, it's arguably the best American Horror Story performance, and I would have a hard time coming up with a different answer, is her performance in Asylum.
Yeah.
Which is just mind-blowingly good.
Absolutely.
I mean,
good.
She's great in Murder House, too, but like Asylum is nuts.
Asylum feels like the culmination of what American Horror Story is supposed to be.
Yeah, and which means it's insane, and some of it's not great, but it's very daring and out there and just like remarkable. Socially pointed, and it's all sort of hidden under this genre haze and whatever.
Yeah.
But I think my actual favorite Jessica Lange Ryan Murphy performance is Feud.
Yeah.
Playing Joan Crawford in Feud, it is a very thoughtful, compassionate, funny performance that'll just rip the guts right out of you. And like, campy. Sorry, Ryan Murphy. In all the ways you want it to be. Did you watch Feud?
I did not.
Jesus Christ, she's so good. She and Susan Sarandon are both just insanely good.
Yeah.
Like, nuts good. So, she is missing a Grammy. Somebody hire Jessica Lange to do a fucking audiobook so she can win a Grammy and have an EGOT.
Right now she just has a toe.
Yes. The triple crown of acting.
Yes.
But yeah, we can call it a toe.
A toe.
But she is a Tony winner, a two-time Oscar winner, and an Emmy winner.
Yeah, and all deservedly
multiple Emmy winner? How many Emmys does this bitch have?
1 million?
Let's see. Let's find out. So she is a two-time Oscar winner, three-time Oscar nominee without winning. I'm not even going to get into that Golden Globe shit. Nominee, winner. Three-time winner.
List of awards and nominations received by Jessica Lange has its own Wikipedia page, just to let you know.
She won for Grey Gardens, which she was really good in. Mm-hmm. She won twice for American Horror Story, once for playing Constance Langdon, and then for playing Fiona Good.
Nice.
She is very good at her job.
Mm-hmm. You know what my favorite role of hers is, weirdly enough?
What?
Titus. Which is a movie I really, really love, despite the missteps that Taymor has made later in her career. Like, it's still a really great film.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's way too long, but...
Yeah, for sure.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's again, like, Ryan Murphy, I feel like she likes to work... Jessica Lange thrives greatest when working with, like, artists who absolutely want to put everything they want on the table.
Yeah.
And she just is able to swim in that and give us gold.
Speaking of people who were nominated for an Oscar twice in the same year, she was the winner of Best Supporting Actress for Tootsie the same year that she was a nominee for Frances, 1983.
There you go. Yeah, bada-bing, bada-boom.
Whoa. It was a good year for Jessica Lange.
Indeed.
Speaking of good years for people.
Yes. Let's talk about our number one pick.
You know, remember when we did that Crazy Ex-Girlfriend list and it was really hard for me, but there was only ever one number one pick and that was not hard for me?
Yeah.
That's what this was like.
Yeah. It's Sarah Paulson. It has to be and always will be Sarah Paulson.
It's just
Sarah Paulson. She, along with Evan Peters, I believe, are the only actors who have been in every season of American Horror Story and feels just as much like Jessica Lange as Ryan Murphy's muse.
Yeah.
A little bit. And she's just always a tremendous performer. And especially in her first season of American Crime Story as Marcia Clark, like she's phenomenal in that, having to juggle so many different, all the social political elements of it while also giving like this really nuanced, layered performance. And she was in Feud as well. And just Sarah Paulson.
Briefly in Feud.
Briefly in Feud.
But she, if you were to... That was very loud. Your little straw.
I know. Dinner's ready.
If you were to say, Allison, you have to pick the Ryan Murphy verse performance. You have to do it now. Mm-hmm. You can't think about it. You have to go from your gut.
Yeah. 3, 2, 1, go.
Duh. It's Marcia Clark.
Yeah.
It's Marcia Clark.
Yeah.
It's the performance of a very crowded, talented cast in... American Crimes in the first season of American Crime Story. It is Sarah Paulson's best performance maybe ever.
Yeah.
It is just extraordinary. And she's great in fucking every season of this show. Mm-hmm. Even when she was playing the conjoined twins, because she gave it her all.
Oh man, the conjoined twins.
Both those characters were very well drawn. She did a really good job.
They were different while also feeling like literally they come from the same person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
But and God, Marcia Clark.
Yeah, Marcia Clark. Well, because a lot of these Ryan Murphy seasons, especially the American Crime stories, center like they have big ensembles, but they always center on like sort of one or two person's stories, and it feels like so much of the first season is Marcia Clark's story.
Yeah.
In her zeal to stand out and assert herself as a feminist lawyer, and sort of in her desire to win this case, it's packed with so much more meaning than just putting someone away from murder and the pressures that she feels, especially as the media sort of hones in on her and has their laser focus on her, and just the way she inhabits that character and that amazing perm.
I think that Marcia is one of the great episodes of TV of our young century.
Mm-hmm.
Someday when in this list-based economy, when someone is like, hey, let's do a list of the best individual episodes of TV of the last 20 years. I look forward to doing that in 2020. That's definitely going to happen probably everywhere. I look forward to Marcia being really high on that list. It's just an extraordinary hour, and it's because of her extraordinary performance. But you know what? She's fucking, like, she's great in Coven. She's so good in Coven. Yeah. She's great in Asylum. Just amazing in Asylum. She's really good in Roanoke.
She plays three characters in Roanoke?
Well, it's...
I suppose I'll wait to find out.
Yeah. You know, Clint, you're not going to watch it. I'm just going to tell you.
All right, fine.
Maybe it's worth going back to watch it and then quit whenever you want to.
Yeah, sure.
If you haven't seen Roanoke, I'm about to spoil Roanoke for you.
Just plug your ears.
So you find out halfway through the season that what you've been watching is a dramatic reenactment of something that really happened. So all the people that you've known at this, like, it's like America's Unsolved Mysteries Next or top, whatever Roanoke. The fuck, right? There are actors playing all those characters, but then there are also the actual people. So she's one of the actors and then shows up as they do an episode of this reality show where they have all the real people and all the actors in the house together. And it's really fucking creepy.
Huh.
She is really good. She's having a love affair with Evan Peters. I think they're engaged. And they're both, like, kind of turned on by the age gap. Kathy Bates is also especially good because she got all this acclaim for playing this part and now is, like, kind of unstable. Great. It's, like, a really, really good, fun role reversal. And Cheyenne Jackson is the director of the reality show.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's pretty great.
Anyway, so that's why people are playing multiple characters and the names are all confusing in Roanoke, because that's the switch.
Right-o.
It's really smart and cool.
But
and
if anyone can do it, it's Sarah Paulson.
Oh, she's so good. She's just really, really good.
She's playing Nurse Ratched in an upcoming series called Ratched?
Yep.
Excuse me?
Yeah, Ratched, that's going to be a Netflix series that Ryan Murphy, like the first sort of Ryan Murphy Netflix extravaganza, and it's the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest story from Nurse Ratched's perspective, which is about as Ryan Murphy as it could possibly get. I look forward to Sarah Paulson winning an Emmy for it.
Yep.
I'm excited.
But yeah, that wraps up our list.
I can't wait for people to tell us how wrong we are.
I know, but also if you tell us that Sarah Paulson shouldn't be number one, you're the wrong one.
Yeah. I mean, so I could see Jessica Lange.
Yeah, but I think
I'll allow Jessica Lange.
Jessica Lange, possibly, but I think because she took such a comparatively early bow, and Sarah Paulson's still there.
Yeah,
right there with him.
Well, and Jessica Lange, even though they sort of blended together, some of them, was never asked to play like super duper against type.
Yeah.
Whereas Sarah Paulson has done insane shit.
Yeah.
Just insane shit. And seems to really relish it. And also, she's like a goddamn American hero. She's just the best.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you know how Holland Taylor and her got together?
No.
She slid into her DMs. Sarah Paulson was like,
I didn't know Holland Taylor had DMs. Taylor. Is she on Twitter?
I mean, she
must be. I guess it must be.
Also, she's really fun in Ocean's 8, which I'm seeing this afternoon again.
Oh, good.
I'm excited.
Yes. Because you reviewed it, yes?
Yes. I'm lukewarm on it, but I still had a really good time. Mm-hmm. But it's really important for movies that are all women to open big, because people are just going to dismiss it as being a woman thing instead of a movie that's just okay. And the highs are high enough that I'm looking forward to seeing it again. Anne Hathaway is so fucking good. She's just really good. So I'm doing a double header. I'm seeing Hereditary.
Ooh,
and then we're emerging into the daylight. And then we're going to see, or then we're going to like get a drink and eat some food. And then we're going back into the theater to see Ocean's 8 as like a palate cleanser.
That sounds perfect.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, great.
With that, we should probably move on.
Yeah.
To
start wrapping up
our closing shit.
Yes.
What
you excited about next week?
What am I excited about next week? Well, first of all, the Tonys are on tomorrow when we're recording, yesterday when you're listening. Unless you're listening Tuesday and then it was 2 days ago. I don't fucking know. It's time travel.
Yeah,
get with
podcasts
it.
Podcasts exist in a void.
I'm very excited about the Tonys. I'm a huge Sarah Bareilles fan, and Josh Groban is endearingly self-aware and can really sing. And I'm looking forward to a Tonys that's not hosted by someone who doesn't want to be there. Yeah. And also Rachel Bloom is presenting again.
Hooray.
I hope she's backstage again wearing progressively tinier hats because she was really, really good. So I'm looking forward to the Tonys. Strange Angel is going to be coming out on CBS All Access. that is a bunch of the episodes are being directed by David Lowery.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited about that. You can look for a review of that this week from Dominic Suzanne Mayer on consequenceofsound.net. And then The Bold Type. Ugh. I'm already relaxed. The Bold Type is a show that I wish I had had when I was 17. It's
I finally saw promos of it when I was starting to watch Cloak and Dagger.
Delightful.
It does look really charming.
It's
great.
It's just really smart about the way it's writing about these young women. There's the occasional hiccup, but for the most part, it's doing a really, really good job and includes the rare, elusive TV dream boss as opposed to TV nightmare boss in Melora Hardin, who you think is going to be Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada, and instead she's just like heaven on heels. She's just like really, really good at her job, but that's also great. Compassionate and thoughtful. And yeah.
Oh, nice.
So I'm very excited about the return of The Bold Type. What about you?
Mine, I'm going to get more space stuff in. Voltron season 6 premiering next week on Netflix. Voltron, they're doing a really interesting thing. I don't know. We've mentioned it in previous episodes of the show. Voltron Legendary Defender is the Netflix version, the reboot of Voltron by the people who did Legend of Korra and Avatar The Last Airbender. It's a really solid show. And what they're doing now is sort of half seasons of 6 episodes. So like this is technically sort of like season 5 plus, but it's the other like 6 or 8 episodes or whatever. They find ways to do really fun, inventive stuff, advance the storyline in serialized ways while not losing the fun, childlike Star Wars meets Transformers atmosphere of the whole thing. Voice cast is amazing. They're doing new interesting things with the stories in like allying with certain elements of the enemy and fascinating ways and sort of dealing with these political machinations in a way that's surprising for a kid's show about a transforming robot. Yeah, so I'm really excited about that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I mean, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
If you're not watching The Expanse, watch Voltron.
Well, that is going to do it for us. Thank you to Kate Kulczyk for allowing us to chat about her for like 5 minutes at the top of the show.
We love you, Kate.
And thank you for recommending Steven Universe. And thanks to you for listening. You can find us on Twitter at TVPartyCUS. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TVPartyPod. And if you have a question you'd like answered, a thought you'd like to share, a strenuous argument for Jessica Lange over Sarah Paulson, you can email us at TVParty@consequenceofsound.net.
You can find me personally on Twitter at AlcoHollywood, and also I'm the co-host of the podcast AlcoHollywood, which you can find on Twitter at AlcoPod or AlcoHollywood.com, and the co-host of Nathan Rabin's HappyCast, which you can find at www.nathanrabin.com.